This is a Pod Dealers Network podcast.
I want to dedicate this week's episode to my aunts and uncles. I don't show enough appreciation to my family, but a lot of the person that I am, a lot of the personality that you hear in this podcast comes from their influence, and I'm forever grateful for it. Special shout out to Uncle Edward. Yo, Gorilla, you got this. I'm going to see you soon. And with that said, high Rhapsody. Hey, Unc, she's dope. Check her out when you get a chance.
What is TWS podcast, episode, whatever? Who cares at this point?
The rant of the vindicated.
It's my podcast, and I do what I want to.
People, listen.
Word, is it still alive?
It's not working for me, Rhett. We're going to keep going.
I know I changed my voice at work.
Bars on the radio.
What is TWS podcast?
One's ready. I feel like the answer's staring at my watch, and I'm feeling so new school.
Suicide attempts, how many tries to take?
Those that don't know, that is Johnny Mathis, and he is one of my Uncle Edward's favorite artists, so I wanted to start the episode out with that one. Again, it's Thanksgiving time, or I guess I need to introduce the podcast. This is the What Is TWS podcast, and I am J.Don Flan, and I'm representing the White Pants Society. Thank you for joining me again. But like I was starting to say, this is the Thanksgiving season, the holiday season. It's a lot about family and, oh man, and just I don't know, just being together and appreciating your loved ones and being thankful. And I titled this episode Stay Grateful, because that's something that I've struggled with and probably is the cause of a lot of the issues I've had in life. Is, you know, someone once told me, you know, you can't, they've never seen a person that's grateful be drunk. You never seen a grateful drunk. Like, you know, if you are taking the time to appreciate what you have in life, then a lot of the issues that drive us towards some of our vices don't have space to pop up. And I'm not talking about like the BS, it always could be worse kind of gratitude. I mean, no, the sincere, like, it isn't bad gratitude. Like, no, whatever you are, like, you hardly ever truly alone. Even when you feel alone, there are people around that want to be around and want to help, that want to support. And maybe you're not in the mood to allow them in at the moment, but they're there. And if you can stop every once in a while and just count those folks, even if you don't want the help, just count the people that are willing to give it. It's something to be grateful for. And throughout my life, I've had people around that were always willing to step in and give help where they saw it. And I wanted to do this episode specifically dedicated to my aunts and uncles, because I had a wonderful group of people around me that kind of stepped in and helped out in situations where, you know, where there were gaps, where there were voids in my life. And my father was an inconsistent presence in my life. And luckily for me, my mother had a lot of brothers. And they all seemed to take pride in being an uncle. And I was able to learn and pick up a lot of things from them. And I hope to kind of carry those things on and make sure the people that meet me and, you know, get a chance to spend any amount of time with me, get to see a piece of them through me. Because I definitely took something from each one of them. I definitely have fond memories and a great amount of love and gratitude for those men and what they represented and what they were for me when I needed them to be there. And I wasn't trying to make this like that somber of an episode. Like, I just, you know, I just want to be grateful today. I want to be grateful for the people that I still have around. And make sure that people who have done things for me and people who I appreciate know they appreciate it. You know, I think we talk a lot about how, you know, everybody wants to be loved. And I think beyond that, everybody wants to know that they're loved. Like, a lot of people are loved, but maybe you haven't told them, or maybe they don't know. Maybe they're wondering. Maybe they're on the fence about whether or not you love them. And sometimes just to know, just to hear it, just to have a sincere gesture of appreciation from someone can mean the world to a person. So today I want to be grateful. Today I want to be grateful for the people who played major roles in my life and who may or may not know it, who may or may not know how I looked at them. And what I took from them, man. I'm gonna try to brighten this up. I really am. I really am gonna try to brighten this up at some point. And I think talking about these men, and then my aunt also, is no way to talk about them without some joy in your heart, without some laughter. It was I had an incredible childhood, and these people were definitely a part of it. I'm gonna start with my Uncle Edward because I did hear that my uncle was having some health issues recently. And that's kind of, you know, what put the spark in me to do this, is that I want to make sure my uncle knows. And I probably should call or something a little more personal. I'm just not as good at that as I am, I feel, at this. And I hope this gets to you, and I hope you hear it. And I hope you know that I love you and I'm thinking of you. But yeah, my Uncle Edward, man, he lived with us for a little while. I used to scratch his dandruff. He used to pay me to scratch his dandruff. And it was quite a job for me. I can't remember how old I was, but he was serious about scratching the dandruff. Like, it's truly gross. It really is gross. It really was gross. Can't say I think back on it fondly, but it was a job. I had a job, and he gave me a responsibility, scratching his dandruff. He was serious about scratching the dandruff. Like, you had to get in there. He wanted some force. Like I felt like this has to hurt. I know how it feels to get my hair combed or whatever. And he didn't have a significant amount of hair, so it felt like I was just scratching scalp, which I guess is what scratching dandruff is. But, man, is that my first memory of my uncle, is scratching his dandruff? But yeah, he lived with us. I remember him being like one of the cleanest people I've ever known. I never known a person to take as many showers as my Uncle Edward. I swear he took 4 to 5 showers a day. It's just like, if you saw him, he was either heading to take a shower or leaving the bathroom from taking a shower. Like, that just felt like the only two states he was ever in. I remember my uncles, I think they were concerned about me, like, you know, not having, like, the male influence and you know, and me not understanding or knowing what masculinity or being a man meant. So they definitely were worried about that when it came to me. And my uncle used to always call me his nickname for me was a gorilla. Gorilla. He was a gorilla. Like, he didn't want me to be as meek and mild and sort of a pushover as I was as a kid. I was really shy. And I was, you know, I was a small, skinny kid. I dealt with bullying and stuff like that. And my uncle was always trying to pump me up, you know, always trying to make me a little, you know, give me a little more edge, give me a little oomph, you know. That's what I took from him. I remember us taking a trip to South Carolina once. We used to travel back and forth from D.C. to South Carolina where my grandmother lived. Man, I think it might have been my first semester in college, and I was, you know, I was coming home and was taking the trip for the holidays, and we stopped at a Cracker Barrel, and I ordered this big breakfast, and like, he was so impressed that I ordered this much food and that I ate it, and it was such a moment for me that I like impressed my uncle on like some manly look at all the food I can eat type shit. Like, I mean, I didn't want to curse in this episode, but I did anyway. But yeah, that was a moment for me. Like, I felt good about myself because I impressed Uncle Edward with the amount of food I could eat. But he also got me he got me in the cologne. And it's weird the way he got me in the cologne. He gave me like his entire cologne collection. And don't ask me like what the brand names and stuff were, but it was just like several bottles of cologne. He gave me his entire cologne collection. And the reasoning behind it was because he didn't need cologne because he was naturally sweet. He had a naturally sweet smell. He didn't need no smell good, as he called it. And so, yeah, that started me off with cologne. I don't wear a whole lot of cologne, but I'm very particular about the scents that I wear. And I only have two or three of them, but I got to jump in deep in of the cologne pool because Unc was naturally sweet. He ain't need it. He passed it on. So, yeah. I didn't know he was a Johnny Mathis fan. I'm learning this now. I never knew the thing about Johnny. I don't even remember him listening to Johnny Mathis when he lived with us for a little bit. But that's dope. That's dope. A lot of my musical taste, or a lot of just the fact that music is such a big part of my life, comes from my aunts and uncles. Like, there's a lot of music around me, and there was a lot of, I'm going to call it classic, you know. You may want to call it old school or oldies, but there's a lot of classic music, a lot of timeless music around me. Stuff that still, like, I still can listen to now. And in prepping for this episode, I was listening to some songs, and it was, you know, taking me some places. But yeah, man, I love Yonka Edward, man. He was a firefighter. Like, my Uncle Edward was just a good dude. He's a legitimate good dude. He still calls me to this day, calls me on my birthday, or just calls me sometimes randomly just to say what's up. And I apologize, man. I've been in my disease, and I haven't been reaching out to people and haven't been responding, and I should. I just want you to know I got those calls, and I'm grateful that you think of me and you reach out. And I do love you, and I do think about you too, Unc. And I'm gonna repair these bridges. We're going to repair these relationships, but just so you know, for sure, no doubt, I love you, and I appreciate you. Unfortunately, my other uncles have all passed away at this point, and so I don't get that opportunity. I missed that opportunity with them to make sure that they knew who they were to me, but you guys can know who they were to me, and I'm sure there's some other people listening that may get something from this as well. Man, this is way more emotional than I thought it was going to be. I apologize, people. I know you may can hear my voice. It was a little shaky. I thought I was going to have way more fun with this than I'm having, but you don't realize some things until you start saying them out loud, until you start talking about it, until you start trying to put words to it and explain it to somebody else. You don't understand the depths of how you feel about certain things. I want to talk about my Uncle Jackie. My birthday is December 6th. His birthday is December 7th. So that's normally the first thing that comes to mind when I think about Uncle Jackie. First thing that comes to mind when I think about Uncle Jackie is King Gold hats. He was just cool. And he always wore King Gold hats. And man, I wanted, you know, like to this day, I've never purchased one, but like that would be like a pinnacle for me. That would be a big... It'd be a big purchase for me to have a King Gold hat like my uncle. And he was always cool to me, but I was like crazy afraid of him for some reason. I don't even know what he ever did to make me fear him, but I feared him. Like, I feared him. Like, real. like you know, as a little kid, all of these men were just, these were giants to me. Like, these were men. Like, my uncles were firefighters and you know, Marines, and been in the Navy, and worked in plants, and like these were men, man. And they took being men, they took being, you know, they took that, they took being brothers, being uncles. They took these things very seriously, and I said, yeah, I just remember them all. You know, as I'm older now, I see like the fun and the jokes and the softer side, but as a kid, man, they was just serious. They was all so serious. And Uncle Jackie was just, to me, was the epitome of serious. He was cool, but he was serious. Like, I don't remember. I know he made jokes. He did make a he did He did, and his nickname for me was Boxhead, and that's like a family heirloom almost. Like there is a lineage of Boxheads. I don't even remember the number Boxhead that I am, but like Boxhead got passed down from generation to generation, and there are several Boxheads. I'm Boxhead number something. I'm in there somewhere. I don't remember exactly which number I am, so somebody can tell me. But yeah, his nickname for me was Boxhead, and wore with pride. Like it was a crown. It was not a, you know, it was a term of endearment. I was a part of something. I was a part of a legacy. I was another Boxhead in the chain. I'm proud to be a Boxhead. I credit my Uncle Jackie with teaching me how to tie my shoes, and my mother hates that story, but I'm going to tell it. So my mother had been working with me for months to try to get me to tie my shoes, and I'm a rebellious child. I'm not slow by any stretch of the imagination, so I'm sure I picked it up somewhere along the way, but I'm just rebellious. And I think all kids do this. If you know if you don't do it, somebody else will do it for you. You just don't do it, or you pretend to not be able to do it. And so I happened to be at my grandmother's house, and, you know, a lot of my aunts and uncles would be there, you know, at any given time. And my Uncle Jackie was there at this particular time. And I think we were on, like, the basement steps, and my mother's trying to get me to tie my shoes, And I'm just, you know, I'm doing the slow, like, I don't know, maybe it's the loop and the. And out of nowhere, Uncle Jackie was like, "Tie them shoes, boy." Not magically appeared. I don't know how. I don't even know. I don't remember my hands moving. I just know my shoes went from untied to tied. And from then on, I told everybody that my uncle taught me how to tie my shoes. And my mother was pissed. But yes, Mama, I appreciate what you did. But that was the push over the edge. Like, I don't know if I would have got. I don't know when I would have got there if it hadn't been for Uncle Jackie, like, pushing it. And the other time I remember being super afraid of him was he had some binoculars, man. He had some super expensive binoculars. Well, they felt super expensive to me. I don't know nothing about binoculars. I just know that it was Uncle Jackie's binoculars. And typically Uncle Jackie did not have like mid-range of things. He had the nicer of things. And so these binoculars had to be like, I don't know, the upper echelon binoculars. But for whatever reason, I was in South Carolina, and they would capture rain and like oil drums, big oil barrels, old. That's what they looked like to me. I don't know if they ever were oil drums, but they were big metal barrels. And so I thought with the binoculars, I was using the binoculars like a microscope, like I could look into the depths of the rain barrel with these binoculars, and they slipped out of my hands and they fell into the water, all the way to the bottom of that barrel. I heard it when it hit, like, doom, you know, that little metallic water sound. And I just knew Uncle Jackie was going to kill me. I just knew that this was how my life ended. Like, I didn't know how I was going to go in there and tell him that I did it. I didn't know how he was going to find out that I did it. But I knew at some point in the near future, these things would happen, and then I would cease to exist. Like, I don't even remember. I don't remember my Uncle Jackie ever raising a hand to me or ever beating me or anything, but I just remember being afraid of it. I don't like this. I think that still was a part of, like, you know, being a, you had a presence. They all had a presence that just, like, it demanded respect and maybe out of children a little bit of fear. but yeah, man, I sure hope I can emulate that one day. I sure hope I can, you know, I can walk into a room and have that kind of presence. But yeah, that was my Uncle Jackie. I'll forever be a Boxhead because of my Uncle Jackie. Appreciate you, bro. See, I had Uncle Glenn. He was a Marine, and that should tell you a lot about my Uncle Glenn. Uncle Glenn was a kind of... He was another one of those cool unks. He leased cars before I think leasing cars was cool. Like I think my uncle had like the newest Cadillac. I don't know if he got a new Cadillac every year, every 2 years, but it was something where like every time you saw him, he had like the newest one, and it had all of the features. It had, you know, before automatic windows was just mainstream. Like he had the automatic windows and the seats that you didn't have to like crank. They had the button and the motors and shit. Like he had all the cool stuff in the car. He had the condo or the timeshare in Myrtle Beach that we would hit every summer and go out to Myrtle Beach and swim in that dirty water. But it was paradise. It was cool back then. My Uncle Glenn was also the type, like he took care of his family. He took care of his family, and his family meant, you know, his wife, his children, and everybody around him. You know, his brothers, his sisters, whoever needed help. He was the uncle that, you know, when you had a family gathering and the children showed up, you knew you needed that. You knew you needed to make your way to Uncle Glenn. Because if you could say hi, you was going to get a dollar. If you, like, had some good grades or you cleaned your room that day, something, you could get it up to maybe five. But you knew just fine Uncle Glenn and had your resume ready because he's hiring on the spot. He's giving out advances right here, today, right now. That was definitely Uncle Glenn. And then and he would make sure to send you Christmas cards and birthday cards. The cool thing about Uncle Glenn, when he sent you Christmas cards and birthday cards, is that they wasn't going to have anything to do with Christmas or birthdays. You might get an Easter card for Christmas, and you might get a Get Well Soon card for your birthday, but it was going to be a card, and it was going to be money in it. And that as a child, is really all you care about. But, you know, he, again, like all my other uncles, they cared about their families, and family meant, like, family, like everybody, you know. Not just, you don't have to live in the same state with me. I don't have to see you all the time. I don't have to, you know, you don't have to live in the house with me. You don't have to be my grandchild, or you don't have to be, you know, my son. Like, if you, my nephew, cousin, or whoever, like, if they needed it and the family had it, you was going to be taken care of. Somebody was going to try to help you. It was going to always be there. And when, you know, when I say stuff like that, that makes me think about my Uncle Melvin, who I used to call Uncle Granddaddy. Because, you know, like, he was, my grandfather passed before I was born, so I never got a chance to meet my grandfather, although I'm told all the time that I look a lot like him and I sound like him, and, you know, we had a similar stature and demeanor. And I got to say, my uncles have to be a testament to the kind of man that my grandfather must have been, because, you know, these were all, in my mind, great men. And they had the essence of what you consider manhood. Like, they had a presence about them, and they took care of people, and you felt safe around them. You felt, you know, like, if something was wrong, you needed a place to go. If you saw one of their faces in the crowd, you knew it was going to be okay. Like, these were the kind of people that they were. These were the kind of people they were for me. But yeah, Uncle Melvin, man, I was scared of all of them, man. I was seriously scared of Uncle Melvin. And again, like, I don't ever remember. And I was bad. Like, I was a bad kid. And I can't say I remember somebody raising a hand to me or taking off a belt. I think I was really easily intimidated. So threats or looks or a stern voice, or if you raised your voice, that was usually enough for me. Uncle Melvin taught me how to play poker. Just sit in his house and play poker. I think I've forgotten a lot of it, but, man, I wouldn't get to play another game of poker. He had a wall of 7-Up and a wall unit. And as a kid, I used to always want some of that 7-Up. I don't you just want soda. You're a kid. And as a grown man now, I'm starting to realize that was never 7-Up. Most of that was moonshine. But, of course, nobody was going to tell me that at the time. But these are the lessons you learn. But his nickname for me was Horse Cat. And nobody knows what that means. I don't know what it means. I don't know that he knew what it means. Nobody in the family knows what it means. But everybody knows, like, that's one of the few, like, truly unique nicknames I've ever had. Like, I've never been a person that people gave nicknames to. I don't know what it was about me. Like, if I just was not cool enough, or I was never, like, that much a part of whatever the clique was, I just didn't get a nickname, or I was hard to come up with a nickname for. I don't know what it is, but Horse Cat is, like, one of the truly unique, identifiable names for me. Like, the people in my family know who Horse Cat is. You know. And I don't know where it came from, what sparked it, whatever. But, you know, that was me and Uncle Melvin. We had our own little language. And by language, I mean he could ask me to go get him a beer using any different set of words. Like, it would be, first, I think it was a he-cow, because he had the with the bull on the can. So it was like, go get me a he-cow. And then it was a SPSID. It became, like, unintelligible stuff, but I knew exactly what he meant. And I was on the job all the time. My uncles put me to work. Like, I was scratching dandruff. I was getting beers. I was a very active child. But yeah, man, Uncle Melvin always made sure we had Christmas. We went to his house, and you know, and he had his grandchildren and, you know, and everything there, and we was right on the same level with everybody else. We got gifts just like everybody else every year. And he didn't even think about it. Like, you the only niece and nephew here. Like, everybody else is like children, grandchildren. Like, it was just, that's just how it was. It was just, you know, family. Yeah. Pardon me for a second. Oh man, I had my Uncle Clinton. James Clinton. Uncle Clinton was a narcoleptic. Like, you remember the girl on the Deuce Bigelow movies? Like, that was my uncle. He could literally fall asleep mid-conversation if you pause too long. Like, if you took too long to say the next thing, you know, if you said something, he said something, you said something, he said something, and then you pause, and then you said something, he might have already fallen asleep. I don't think Uncle Clinton has seen the end of a movie a day in his life. I don't know. That was, you know, my sister and I used to spend nights in South Carolina when we went to go visit him. We would have walkie-talkies, and we'd be doing these fake, like spy operations. Like, how close could we get to Uncle Clinton? Huh? Like, how far, you know, could we maneuver our way around him while he was watching a movie without waking him up? And we had walkie-talkies, and we'd be telling each other what to do or where you was at and that kind of thing. Like, my Uncle Clinton, the best way I could describe him to people is like a real life Uncle Buck. Like I think if he was in a situation where he could have flipped pancakes with a shovel, he absolutely would have done it. Like, he absolutely would have done it. My sister can tell you about times, I think he tried to come pick her up at school with a lit cigar. I know when I would take trips with him to go to the grocery store, he was the kind of person that, like, left his car running with the keys in the ignition while we went in the store. He was just Uncle Clinton. Like, there was nobody to compare him to. There was nobody like him. He wasn't trying to be like nobody. He was just him. That was him. He loved show tunes and musicals. One of the reasons my mother, you know, was a big fan of show tunes and musicals, and they introduced him to my sister and I, you know. And I listened to a lot of show tunes and musicals. My Fair Lady, South Pacific, The King and I, Oklahoma, Les Miserables, Cats. Yeah. Yeah, all of those. All right. Uncle Clinton was the kind of person you didn't want to use the bathroom after. I remember him, like, being places. He would wear farmer's overalls because, you know, when he was in South Carolina, he grew watermelons and he grew a lot of stuff, and he would wear like farmer's overalls. And I'm not sure he ever wore drawers underneath those things, because you could consistently see the crack of his ass on most days. But again, that was Uncle Clinton. Like, that was him. And if you went to visit him, he probably was going to give you more change than you could count. And you know, and as an adult, when you go back and think about stuff like that, Like right now, if I was like saving or had a jar where I drop change in, like the amounts of change I used to get from people, my uncles, my grandmother, the amounts of change they would give you at one time. Now as an adult, I realize how long it takes to accumulate that amount of change. And to just in one fell swoop be like, that's my nephew, hey, here you go. Like, it's a sacrifice. It's a sacrifice I didn't quite understand at the time. It was just change. Like, oh, you don't want your change. Like, it's just change, not the bills. So they don't care. But I know now, like, if I had a change jar, like, when I walk past that jar and it's full, I'm thinking about, like, man, that was a lot of, like, serious hard work. Like, I go places sometimes and, like, buy soda out of the vending machine just to get the change. I don't even want the soda. I just want change to put in my jar. But I know, like, that takes several days of dropping that 35 cent in that jar to fill it up. And then to just, in one fell swoop, be like, that's you. I have it. Yeah, all that stuff meant something to me. My Uncle Clinton had a lot of sayings. And I hope to really carry these things forward. It might be one of the reasons why I'm divorced right now, because my wife used to hate it. Some of the stuff that I would try to carry forward that Uncle Clinton used to say. My favorite is, don't thank me, thank God. So yeah, anybody, my wife, anytime she said thank you, don't thank me, thank God. She hated it. Oh, God, she hated it. And, I just felt like it was my duty to carry that one on. He also has the, you ask him how you feel. I feel with my hands. That's my uncle. He feels with his hands. Don't sound right the way I just said it, but that's Uncle Clinton. And I don't think he cared very much. I definitely want to start using that one more. Man, what else did Uncle Clinton used to say? I'm skinning this cat. Oh, I'm a mess maker. So he used to live in South Carolina with my grandmother when they moved back to South Carolina from D.C. And part of the fun of going to visit my grandmother and uncle in South Carolina was listening to them fight. They would fight all the time. And I like, you know, drag like serious fights. Like just like they annoyed each other. And I think they enjoyed annoying each other as much as we enjoyed listening to them annoy each other. Because just out of nowhere, he'd be in the kitchen cooking and, you know, Mama White would holler from the hallway, don't make a mess in there. I'm a mess maker, Mama. I'm a mess maker. That's what I do. I make a mess. You know, and my mom was telling me, like, he was a cook in the Navy, so he made mess as a profession, which I didn't understand as a kid, but I get it now. But they'd just be hollering back and forth, you know I got bad nerves, Mama. You know I got bad nerves. And again, as an adult, I'm talking about, you know, a veteran who was in the Navy, you know, during some difficult times. And so when he was hollering back, I got bad nerves. That could have been real. That could have been some PTSD for real. But it was just hilarious as a kid. Like, I got bad nerves. You know I got bad nerves. And it was half the fun of going down there just to hear Uncle Clinton complain about his bad nerves. And now, of course, I realized that was serious. Maybe he needed to talk to somebody. I don't know. But now, yeah, these are my uncles, and these were men that stepped in, and my uncle Clinton, before he passed, and this definitely affects me. He was trying to call me a lot, and he was trying to call me to talk to me about my nephew, and what I, you know, and how we could help, you know, get him together. He lives with my mother, and you know. We just want to help him get out there into the world. Like, you know, he's a late bloomer. And Uncle Clinton used to call me all the time. And you know, and I wouldn't answer the phone because I just had this, you know, I wanted to be left alone with my bottles. I didn't want to feel, you know, I didn't want to think. But he was calling me to talk to me about my nephew. You know, he wanted me to be an uncle. You know, the way I had kind of taught. I was taught that uncle should be, and it's not too late. It's not too late. We can fix that. I will fix that. Oh, I hope I've not been too much of a downer. before I go, before I end this episode, I do want to also talk about my aunt in Lay. As I spent a large part of my childhood with her, traveling back and forth to West Virginia, where she lived, back and forth to South Carolina to see my grandmother. We spent a lot. We logged a lot of miles together. I can't. That would be interesting. Like if I could go back and calculate like how many miles we traveled together, you know, going back and forth across in these states. It's a good chunk. She is definitely one of the people who. She is the reason I'm a sports fan. She's the reason I'm a Redskin fan. And she's getting up there now. I know this year. I don't think she's given up on him, but I know she went ahead and just moved completely over to the Nats. Like, she don't even talk about the Redskins. We don't talk about the Redskins no more. We talk about the Nats. Redskins is too much for her. But she's the reason I'm a sports fan. Like, my aunt. Like, I didn't have a lot of people. My mother don't watch sports like that. You know, Pops wasn't around. It's my aunt and lady got me into sports. The other thing we used to do a lot is watch Dirty Dancing. That's one of my favorite. I love Patrick Swayze. He's one of my favorite actors of all time. And Dirty Dancing is one of my favorite movies of all time because I've probably seen that movie more than 100 times. And nobody puts Baby in the corner. Try me. I love that movie. I love Dirty Dancing, man. And the remake, don't do that. You can't remake Dirty Dancing. When my daughter was born, and I was in the hospital doing the skin-to-skin time, and and I'm sober as hell right now, people, so this is just like actual emotion. I'm shocked. Didn't know I still had it in me. When my daughter was born, and I was in the hospital doing the skin-to-skin time, you know, I wanted to sing her a lullaby. And the only lullaby I could think of was, and it's not even a lullaby, the only song I could think of was Bushel and a Peck by Doris Day. Because that's the song my aunt used to sing all the time. Like, she never used to sing the whole, I didn't even know there was more words to the song. All Aunt Lay sang was, you know, I love you, a bushel and a peck, a bushel and a peck, and a hug around the neck. And yeah, and I just repeated that to my daughter over and over again. That, you know, that first night, or when I finally got to have my skin-to-skin time with her. I've since learned all the words to the song. Tried to teach the song to Elise. I'm not sure how much she remembers. I know my ex-wife knows all the words to the song. So, yeah. Little things like that, like, they carry over and they can travel across generations. Just a little, you know, song my aunt used to hum to me became the lullaby I sang to my daughter. And maybe... who knows what she does with it, you know. But I just want to say, you know, during this season, stay grateful. During any time in life, stay grateful, especially during the hard times. There is always something to be thankful for. And it is a chore sometimes. It is a job to find it. But if you want to maintain happiness, you know, for me, if I want to maintain sobriety, if I want to maintain sanity, it's incumbent upon me to find that those things to be thankful for, to be grateful for at all times. And today I'm grateful for the people that have been a part of my life. I'm grateful that I remember them. I'm grateful that you know, I'll have the opportunity to carry on and emulate the traits in them that I admire. I'm grateful I have, you know, a daughter I can tell these stories to, and I can tell her about her great uncles. Yeah, man, I'm grateful that I used to think I lost the ability to be emotional, that I was so detached from the world that I didn't care anymore. And at least in this moment, I know that I care. I do care, people. I care deeply about you. So I want you to stay grateful. I want you to stay thankful and find your peace in that. You can maintain peace if you can always find something to be thankful for. So, man, with that said, chose a song to rock out to. And this one, I did Johnny Mathis for Uncle Edward at the beginning. I'm going to do a song for Aunt Adelaide to head out. I know she would probably prefer The Temptations. But when I think of my time with Aunt Adelaide, I only think of one song in particular. And that's what we're going to rock out to. All right. So thank you for listening. Until we speak again, be safe and be the light. Love y'all. Happy Thanksgiving. Rock out.
Just set my soul on fire. Whatever she talks, that talk.